Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana.
All right, how you guys doing? Come on in. Let's get this done. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds and souls, the hearts and lives of people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am a podcaster. I'm an entertainer. I'm a man who ships my merchandise from my home with my own two little hands. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler. We are sitting here live in the studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before we go any further, this is a fan support and listener supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every single Thursday on ColtCabana.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from. A couple great ways that you can support, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend, let somebody know, help out that algorithm. Share a link on your Facebook, would you? That's a great way to support. Best way you can do it, though, monetarily, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs, digital downloads. I get a whole slew of shirts and a whole slew of digital downloads. Help me keep this dream alive, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com. Taz is on the show. That's exciting. A lot of you guys know my love for ECW, the ECW era, the ECW years. It's that nostalgia about it. My friend and I were watching just yesterday. I decided to jump on the network, and we were watching some world-class and some ECW television and some Clash of the Champions, and the nostalgia just kicks in, and you're like, how come I like it when this just Southern dude is in front of the ring putting over what's going on the show tonight? How come I don't mind when you can see the cameraman directly behind the announcer as he's announcing the match for that night? How come I just don't mind the low-rent graphics? Do I think the product today is just so overproduced? Do I sound like that guy who is like, I liked it back when I liked it? Yes. Ugh, I hate that I sound like that. But I do. Oh, it's a trip. Taz being on the show is a trip. The man that headlined that first pay-per-view when I used to watch the commercial for ECW Barely Legal on pay-per-view, I would sit and keep the pay-per-view channel on my cable box and just wait for that commercial to come. It was so exciting. Today it's so easy. You just go on YouTube and you watch it over and over and over again, but you had to sit and you had to wait for it. I could have been watching so many other things, but no, I sat on that pay-per-view channel and I waited for Paul Heyman to come on there and tell me how excited I should be for Taz and Sabu. And I was excited. And I went to my friend Michael Emelfarb's house. How Jewish can you get, right? I went to his house and we watched that first one. He was not an ECW fan. I was like, you have to watch it. You have to order it. And he did, reluctantly. I still don't know if he even liked it, but I was in love. I couldn't believe I was watching the pay-per-view in Chicago when it wasn't on television yet. So exciting. And we talk about the wrestling biz. You know, I was listening to Marin. Of course, I'm a huge Marin fan, and people were giving him shit because he didn't ask questions to Keith Richards. And he said a great thing, and I'm going to repeat what Mark Marin said. He said, if you want those questions answered so bad, go start a podcast and you interview him, or go start something and you interview him. Not that we didn't get to anything that I didn't want to get to, but the idea is it's more about the feelings than the answers. I mean, sometimes I get in my head, but I always try to make sure to get myself out of my own head. God, it's just about, I don't know, talking in the moment about whatever we talk about. And I mean, obviously, I want to talk about ECW stuff, but I love just hearing about that struggle, man. Like, whatever it might be for that specific person. And to me, I really relate with those early years or trying to get in stuff. You know, years where it's not about money and it's just about how do I get into wrestling? How do I succeed? And those are the fun years, and that's kind of a lot about what Taz and I talked about. So every year or so, I have this pain in my lower back. It's something with the lumbar. I'm pretty sure when I'm done wrestling, I'm going to have to get a whole backiotomy. But every year, it kicks up, and it kicked up while I was in Russia, and I got through the match, and then after the match when the adrenaline was all gone, I could barely move and I was able to get through it. And I only bring it up because I want you guys to get a glimpse into our lives. And it's not just me, and it's the decisions that we make. And now at 35 years old, this was a decision that I would make, you know, when I was 25. But I still feel that I have to live the same lifestyle. And I had a show. And I swear the last time I did this, because I was talking to Pretty Peter Avalon, who I wrestled, because last time I wrestled for Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, the same exact thing happened to me. That's so weird that that's when it was. And for the podcast fans, you could probably know the timeline, because I remember him saying, when I went out there to wrestle, I was like, I don't know why I'm out here. I could barely move. And the same kind of thing happened as I wrestled Peter Avalon on Championship Wrestling from Hollywood Television. I was a little better this time, though, because the moment I came home, I went right to the chiropractor and got a massage. And I don't mean to sound like a Richie Rich, but one of my best friend's brother is a chiropractor, and he just straight up hooks it up. So if you're in Chicago, go see Dr. Jeremy Weiss at Chiropractical Solutions on Belmont. I know that I should be taking 2, 3, 4 weeks off, but in my head, it's like, I've got this booking. I got to do it. I'm going to go out there. People want to see me. I know Amanda out there wants to make sure I'm in California, and I can't let her down. So I have these week breaks in between, these Monday through Thursdays, where you just pray it all goes away and you slab on the tiger balm and you put a tennis ball on the ground and you try to rub this knot out and you stretch as much as possible, only to do it the next week. So, I mean, I sit here and it's better. I'm worried about October because I'm going to Japan, and I remember this happening last time when I was in Japan, the same kind of injury. But this time it's not the week before, so all I can do is, I don't know, stretch and prevent. And then when it gets better, I'll never do any of that again. And then I'll get hurt again. And then I'll go back to that routine. Seems strenuous. It's actually seemed to work out for me these last 17 years. The song this week is by our good friends, Anti-Scene. Check out their music and upcoming events at anti-scene.com. The song is called Sabu. Makes a lot of sense. Enjoy it. We'll be back with Taz. Get extreme, you'll break your neck. Nephew's a notorious one. When he does the job, he still has one. Respect! Our way is the only way. Hesitate, he'll make you pay. My man's a man, hostile city. You're the first to show no pity. Suicidal, homicidal, genocidal. Oh my God! Usually, I don't give a time context of what we're doing, but we're at like this independent show.
Yes,
and I love the idea. Because that's a lot of what I wanted to talk about here is I kind of think, I don't know, it might be weird for you, but like I know you of these independent roots a little bit.
Yeah.
And you haven't been to one of these shows in years. Tell forever. Me what you said when you came in.
When we were walking up here to go to this studio to do this,
yeah.
I said to you, man, it's so weird coming to a building and at an independent show at a small church, especially in Brooklyn. This is my roots as working before. Back years ago, 25 years, it wasn't even called, you know, independence.
Yeah.
It was just,
what was it called?
Just like work, you know, like, dude, it didn't have a name, I swear to God. It didn't.
Where do you think the word independence came from? Is there somebody that coined that?
I wouldn't be shocked somehow if the WWE to separate themselves, you know what I mean?
Like, oh, that was like a taboo word. Yeah, because you'll hear like Jim Cornette and all those guys talk about them outlaw shows.
Yeah, the outlaw shows. You see, of course, the guys down south, like Corny and those guys, yeah. And that was the thing back in the day, man. If you were from like guys like me, and even before me, the guy who broke the ice for the Northeast guys was Mick Foley. And Heyman, as a non-wrestler,
broke the ice in terms of what?
To get into that next level. You know what I mean? Like Mick, when he went to Memphis, I'm telling you right now.
So he was on these outlaw shows, you're saying?
Yes, but in New York.
Okay.
You know, he broke in with DiNucci in Pittsburgh, but as you know, he's a Long Island, New York guy. Mm. So we all would work, man, like all over the Northeast and a lot of New England and Brooklyn, Queens, you know, all that kind of deal. And Mick, when he went down to, I think it was Memphis.
Yeah.
That was like a big deal. Like for us, for the guys that were wrestlers that were trying to break in, that were all around Mick's age, we were like, dude, he made it.
Everybody They couldn't believe that he got to Memphis?
No, no, we were happy for him. No, it wasn't nothing like that. It was just like
How come he was the first one to go?
I don't know. I just think he had good size. Back then, size was a big deal. He was just a big guy, and he was different than everyone.
Yeah.
And for a guy his size, he did, as you know, some crazy stuff, right. And he could work, you know? I mean, he sold well. His offense was intense, you know? So, and it was less reality-based then, too, mm-hmm. But Mick just, I think, caused his promos, too. He kind of was ahead of the curve on a lot of us.
Yeah. And when we think about, I guess, so you thought, like, hey, like, that was the territories, Memphis, and that was, like, big, so there was no...
Well, yeah.
In New York?
Well, here's the thing.
Obviously, New York.
Well, New York, yeah, well, that was obviously Vince McMahon, right? But back then, I'm talking about, like, late 80s, you know, if you were working for the AWA or World Class in Texas or Memphis or in Canada, Calgary... Well, dude, it was huge. And, of course, the holy grail was Japan. So, like, the first time I got to work in Japan, it was a huge deal. And then when I got, like, a contract with New Japan, it was like, oh, my God, that's it, I made it. You know, but I really didn't. But in my crazy mind and my brethren around me, you know, the Northeast guys, we were like, that's huge. So, for Mick, like, he really, I felt, you know, as a New York wrestler, like, he broke the ice. And, like, I was talking about Heyman because Heyman, I don't know who ended up, like, down in the Memphis territory first. Was it Heyman or Mick? I really don't know. But Paul was another New York guy, and it's like, I didn't really know Paul then, but it was a big deal.
How is this guy down? Were you like, how is this guy down here in general?
How is this guy down? Then once I heard him cut, I heard of him, and then once I heard him cut promos, and to me it was like, this guy's niches. He looks like what's his name?
Johnny Dangerously.
Johnny Dangerously, yeah. Yeah, so he's got the Paulie Dangerously. This guy's just a farce. I thought he was like a jabroni, right? But then I heard like some like videotape on his promos. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, my man can talk, all right? And then I got to obviously know him and meet him. And
yeah, so what was the big thing in New York then, I guess? Like, so, because, right, you have your stages, and you're like, oh, if I can only get to this one thing in this area, and then maybe I can go to Memphis or whatever it is. What, was there a big thing then?
For me, like, I wanted to obviously work for, you know, the WWF, right?
Yeah, but that's the biggest.
Right, and then there was NWA. Those were the big boys. And, like, the next, the lower level kind of was AWA. And I'm like, oh, man.
But underneath
you saying underneath that?
Like, ICCCWW, no. You know, is nothing.
Dude, I held titles there. Come on.
No, but maybe that was, you know, okay, like, starting.
Yeah. Okay, the IWCCW, and I worked for them when it was just ICW. How about that? So yeah, that was the Savoldis, Mario Savoldi's territories. But they were based out of Parsippany, New Jersey. So he booked mostly, you know, the Northeast guys. And yeah, for us, that was like our Memphis per se, but we weren't working as much as those guys. We'd work maybe once or twice a week. That's about it.
But when you start training, you're like, man, if I could just get to that,
no,
right?
No, I wasn't like that. No, I wasn't. Tell you the truth, I kind of was a little thick-headed. I was delusional is a better word. I was like, no, I'm going right to the top.
Right to the top.
And I thought I was going to do it in like a year.
Yeah.
And then Johnny Rods, who broke me, was like, no, bro, you got to relax, you know?
It's fun because I had the same thought, like, because I'll be training guys a lot recently.
Cool.
And like, if you go into training thinking like, man, if I could just get on this one local show, like how, like, and I think it works with any business because, you know, even like as now like podcasters, both of us or whatever, let's say we want to get in entertainment, like if you just go in going, man, I hope I can get into Blockbuster Movies, as opposed to going like, if I can just get in this one TV commercial, it would be the greatest.
Yeah.
And then you work your way
slow. Yeah, it's true.
You were a WWF guy right away.
Yeah, because I was a little bit, I was like, oh man, it's like, I was so mature. Like in my brain, I was so competitive and combative. Right. And I had a judo background. I had a, you know, heavy football background. So I wasn't like a huge wrestling fan. You know, like if you sat here with like Tommy Dreamer, I mean, Dreamer's goal his whole life, like in high school, was to do what he's doing now. And he completed it. I was kind of a casual WWF fan. Mm-hmm. I was a New York kid. And I'd watch it at midnight. Oh, Bruno Sammartino is cool. You know, superstar Billy Graham. But I wasn't like a diehard. So I needed a job. And that was my thing. But then I gained a rapid respect.
You fell in love with it, sure.
Good God, I did, yeah. And it was hard as hell.
How you look at that and just go, I need a job.
Yeah.
So what happened to you?
I I got into a little scrap in college, and I kind of was removed not just from the football team but from the college. So I kind of was like, take it easy, bro. See ya. I had to go. Right?
Can you dive into that or no?
I got into a little fight in a locker room with a guy, and then I hurt the guy. And I got the better end of the fight. I won the fight.
Yeah.
I was kind of a scrappy
kid. But you
lost
the battle.
I lost the war,
bro. You lost the war.
Because then I had to deal with my old man. So he was hot. He's like, what the hell? You know, and
were you on a scholarship?
I would play D2 ball. So back then it wasn't. Mm-hmm. No, I wasn't. So I was financial aid. I mean, my family had no money. So I was like, I was kind of there on a full ride thanks to the state of New York. You know
right.
what I mean? So ride's a ride.
Yeah.
But anyway, then when I came, I had to come home. I had no money. I had nothing. And I lived in the basement at my parents' house, which wasn't fancy. He's like, dude, you're going to get a job. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And so I was bouncing. I was working security. I'm just like, I was working construction. I was a wheelbarrow guy at my uncle's construction.
You sound just so typical. This sounds so typical New York. Like, if I was to look
at you're from Chicago. It's not much different. Come on.
No, it isn't. But God, just getting kicked off, the coming back, living with the parents in the basement, doing the shit jobs. I'm picturing it right now. I'm getting a great visual
of it.
It's
a shoot, man. And then my dad knew a guy. My dad was like an amazing bowler. Like when he was I'm shooting. He was like quasi on a tour, you know, like a pro bowler's tour. But like he bowled for what they call action. Okay, basically, he made his living.
Kingpin.
Yeah. So that's what he did.
And he's a hustler. Sorry, you take
God rest
to that?
His soul. But
sorry.
No, it's all good, bro. Because he was.
But
you
we're
know?
I mean, we're hustlers.
Yes, we are hustlers. Yeah. That's true. We are. I guess it's in my genes.
Yeah,
I never
right?
had the genetics. So
you know, not th- but like my father was a clothing salesman, and years later,
same deal. Yeah.
I find myself selling clothes, you know, selling t-shirts.
You sell t-shirts.
Like that
sell merch.
Yeah, exactly.
You sell merch.
Yeah.
So my dad knew a guy that he had bowled with, that knew a guy, real New York, right?
Yeah.
That knew this pro wrestling guy that used to train people, that was starting to train people in Brooklyn. So there was no going on the internet and looking up the unpredictable Johnny Robs.
Right.
But I knew of his name. Oh, he would lose matches all the time on TV. I remembered the guy. So I didn't really have like a respect for it. And then I went to meet with him. He said, well, you know, I'm cutting out a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So I met with the guy.
Well, let me ask you this. So that's one option. Was there like other options? Or like how come wrestling was the one that stuck with you as like the, oh, this is the job?
I didn't know it was going to be the job. Okay,
but you were like, I need a job.
I need a job. But this is what I was going to get to. So when I started, when I met with Johnny Rods and I told him all the stuff that I'm going to do in the business, he laughed in my face.
Yeah.
I met him on Jamaica Avenue in East New York. Okay, and for New Yorkers, they know what that is. It's kind of like this. It makes this neighborhood we're in right now looks like Hollywood Hills. So he said, listen, bro, you got to learn some stuff first. You know, you don't have a lot of size. You know, at the time, I was like 260. I was muscular as hell. He goes, no, I mean, he goes, you're short. I go, yeah, so what? He goes, I go, I'm tough. He goes, I know, but you got to learn some stuff. This before we even walked into school, bro.
You're ready.
I'm cutting promos on this guy. Like, you know, and my father's there. And he's like, he's telling me, relax. You know, he's telling me, I'm sorry, my son's a little bit, you know, he's kind of like a little out there, you know. And he's like, no, Johnny's like, yeah. But I was stupid in a way because I just felt like I was just going to go in there and just beat everybody up, which I couldn't have done anyway. But in my mind, that's what I thought. I was a kid.
Yeah.
Well, I started to get trained. And after, no lie, two sessions with him. Now, this was when it was me, and I started the same day with a guy, Mondo Clean, if you remember him.
Okay?
Yeah, we started the same day together, and Big Dick Dudley, Alex Rizzo, God rest his soul, if you remember him.
Of course.
We started the same day together, and a guy named Bialo the Giant, who was just
him.
A big, heavy guy, and he was just a huge guy that really couldn't work well. But he was like the senior student.
But
and
all the, big dudes in there.
Big dudes.
Yeah.
And I was like this runt, you know? So right there, I like that. Because like for me now it's a challenge, you know? Because that was my whole thing as a football player. I was always undersized, you know? So I dug it, you know? I liked being a little engine that could, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So after two sessions, I mean, I was getting my ass whooped, not by anyone else except Johnny Rods. Because he wanted to teach me. Now, at the time, Johnny was still in ring shape. He was working. And in 2 days, I had a whole new respect, not just for the business, but for Johnny Rods, you know, because I just got, I guess what I learned was called stretched, you know, more than once, you know.
Yeah, and
humble me.
Yeah, and you got the wake-up call, which is nice that you were like, it snapped and you got it.
Yeah.
And you move forward because, you know, it's a weeding out process,
dude,
that we hear about now and still happens.
Absolutely.
And,
right. Colt, I would drive home. in my beat up 73 Malibu listening to, and tell your boy this.
My podcast?
No, not your podcast. The Cult of Personality on my cassette. So you let him know that. And I'm like, God, if I ever make it, this is my song.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But I wasn't really a Cult of Personality, but I just loved the song, right?
Yeah. Anyway. I had those songs that I listened to.
Yeah, of course,
that
right? Just to fit me. And I would drive home after two sessions, no BS, man, in tears. Just not just physical pain, but like I never was humbled like that by another person. You know what I mean? And I would go home and talk to my girlfriend about it, who's now my wife, and she's like, well, you can't quit. Don't, you know, she didn't want me to do
this. Did you want
to
quit?
I wanted to quit, but I knew I couldn't quit because of my pride, and she didn't want me to get into this from Jump Street.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she wanted a guy 9 to 5 that, you know, had a regular job. But she's like, she knew I wasn't a quitter because you can't quit. You
still
know?
Your wife, and boy, did you not live that life?
Oh, man.
That 9 to 5 life.
Oh, dude. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so what happens, bro, is now I'm trained with Johnny Rods for a month, and next thing you know, I get this gig with the Long Island Railroad, like as a trackman, like digging holes and $15 an hour.
Yeah.
Union, benefits, the whole deal. I'm like, wow, this is pretty legit. I'm making money and I'm training to wrestle and I could go to the gym after the, you know, the railroad stuff. So then I, you know,
my girl will be impressed.
Yeah,
with me.
She was. She's like, listen, maybe this, you're doing good now. You're training for a month and a half. This wrestling, yeah, maybe you know, take right. Bye bye. You know, and I'm like, no. And I ended up staying on the Long Island Railroad for about 6.5 years until I finally, you know, got a real break. So
that was the job that you stuck with?
Yes.
What was I
told you I was going to get to it.
Yeah.
See, yeah. It took me a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I know this is jumping, but like, what was the official, like, I can quit the Long Island Railroad and wrestling will take me?
ECW.
ECW.
Eastern champ, the original ECW, when Eddie Gilbert had just left the book, Paul came in to take the book from Todd Gordon. That was it right there. I mean, when Paul took over and I started working for Paul, you know, he sat with me and said, look at this thing is gonna blow up. I'm gonna make this thing blow up. And Todd's supportive of it, and we got the money. You're not gonna be a millionaire, you know, but maybe down the road you'll make some legit money. Just stick this out. And I loved it, you know what I mean? Because I was working. Now, I worked a lot before that, the whole IWCCW, all that.
Also, I mean,
going fast forward 6 years here, you know.
No, but
years.
I'm saying, like, I could, and this is probably will seep in, but like the football player view, I played football.
Right.
I get
Remember
it.
You told me that, yeah.
And I could tell from you, it's just like that was your head coach who was right.
He Amen.
Was, yeah, and you were like, I'm on the team.
That's a great analogy, and you're right.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. And well, the one that was not really like embracing it was she was my fiance.
Yeah.
You know, so we evolved, and she's like, well, you know, cause she met Paul. She's like, yeah. This is a normal girl here.
Yeah,
you know?
right.
So
when you stop the railroad, because it's a union job, it's there's so much there, and like I don't know it as well because I stopped my normal job. A lot of people who do, you know, right, they put a cut to their normal job, but like I wasn't making big money at all. You know, I think the story I tell is like I made 11,000 as a teacher and 8,000 as a wrestler, and I was like, all right, I can do that.
I didn't know you were a teacher.
I was a teaching assistant for 2 years.
But the question I have for you on your podcast, Colt, were you a better teacher than Matt Stryker?
No. I was a teaching assistant, only doing it.
Oh, come on. I was giving you a chance to bury Matt. Sorry, I love Matt, but come on.
Oh, he's the smartest guy in the world.
Yeah, he's pretty smart. Yeah. Jeez. Unless you ask Raven, because Raven will tell you he, of course, is the smartest guy in the world.
The words that come out of Stryker, unless he's just a great memorizer of words.
He is. He is. He's a lot of things.
That's
Matt.
It.
Yeah.
I like Matt.
No, I like Matt too. I like
Was ECW full time?
Well,
because it wasn't ECW, it was Eastern Championship.
Correct.
Right?
It ended up being because I'm trying to remember now. We would do house shows like on Friday. We would do TV Saturday, and we'd have like another house show on Sunday. And I was making enough money per shot that, you know, I was able to get by. You know, I was still living at home, and then after about a year with Eastern Championship Wrestling, you know, Paul and Todd, I started to get over a little bit, and my work was there, and I started making more money, and then you know, we ended up, my wife and I, well, my fiance and I at the time, we bought a small house, and I was able to get a house. We always wanted to own a home, you know, and that was our first house, and so I was able to do well.
So money-wise, like, after the, it was always kind of a slow, that's kind of how mine was. It was always like a nice, real slow increase.
Yep, same here.
Yeah, which I think is I think is the better. If you want long term success, it's in
appreciation.
Wrestling, yeah, right.
Yeah,
if come you get on, that bro. Quick, I mean, and then you have to go down to the shitty paydays.
Yeah, of course. But it is to your point. It's the total appreciation because, you know, you learn to just appreciate what you're heading towards, and once you get it, you're very protective of mm-hmm. it, and you have it now. You know what I mean?
How are you with money? Are you a spender or are you a saver?
I'm the spender. She's the saver.
You are a
yeah.
spender.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I feel like as a guy who's gotten the slow, like I remember trying to make a living off of 20 grand yeah. a year or 10 grand a year.
Yeah.
Like I just feel like I never want to not yeah. live like that.
You know what, that's cold. Dude, here's the thing. Because once I started making some money, I never had money as a kid. My family never had money. You know, so when I had the opportunity to like spend some money, I went a little crazy.
Yeah, okay.
Nothing crazy.
But there's
crazy.
Two sides of that. Right. There's yeah. guys like me and there's guys like you.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. And then before I got married and we had a little sit down, my wife is a big influence on me. I uh-huh. keep talking about her. So she said to me, listen, you need to chill and you need to learn how to. She taught me how to have a savings account. And I was just, dude, I was a street kid.
Right.
You know what I mean? So and now. Well, now, meaning the past 15 years. No, I was doing really well in ECW, became extreme, and then went to WWE. No, I'm not the type of guy that's rolling around in, like, you know, right. crazy, like, over-the-top, super expensive cars.
Monster
and,
trucks.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not, like, one of those guys.
What
no.
was the first, what was the purchase that you look back and go, Jesus, why did I do that?
When I signed with WWF, I got a Escalade that had a brand new Cadillac Escalade that had every nook, cranny, bells and whistles you could imagine.
Give me everything.
And I didn't use half of it. And half the time I was on a plane in a hotel in a rental car. So the car just like really I didn't even use it. Yeah. You know?
Distilled water? Does it have a distilled water dispenser in there?
And I'm like, this was stupid. What am I doing? You know what I mean? So, you know.
Oh, good.
But it's like now, you know, then once we had a child, you know, then it was like you instantly change and then I was like, well, it's about hit, you know, for his college education and, you know,
yeah.
for him to have more than us. You know.
Tasmaniac.
Oh, the man.
Tell me, but, yeah, kind of because that's I mean, yeah, listen, ECW was like, and I talk about it a lot on this podcast, like that was, you know, that was my 16, 17, 18.
Yeah.
When I was 16, you know,
ECW,
so like,
okay.
So for me, it was just like, that was like everything that represented the cool wrestling.
That's cool, man. Yeah, it's nice to hear.
Yeah, for sure, man. And so
I remember you talking when you came on my show, we talked a little bit about that, and I didn't know that about it until you said it, but yeah, it's cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
Chicago, bro, we were hot, man, back in the day.
Yeah, but we didn't get you, you guys were... It took a couple years to get when you got on TV. You had really hit the stride.
Yeah.
You know, so by the time like I was introduced to everybody, you know, I read the magazines and I saw the Tasmaniac, and then you know, they like PWI would show the transformation of before and after, kind of. You know. And so so when you guys hit the stride, you know, you were on top. Sabu was on top. I had this conversation, and I don't know if we have to talk about it, but I was just looking back at like I watched something with Sandman and how over he was, and then like I just look now like. He wasn't the best like wrestler.
No,
but he was in these. So, here's what I was saying: like he was in these main event matches. Yep. Like, and I was like, you could put Taz in a main event match. You could put Sabu in a main event match. You could put Raven in a main event match. Like they can hold their RVDs. You know, they can hold their own in the wrestling.
Yep.
But Sandman's just like he did main event matches.
He was smart. He was very intelligent. The way he worked, he knew. He
literally couldn't do a headlock takeover, I don't think.
No, I think you might be right. But he knew enough to get by. And if you notice, his matches were never long. And if they were longer, he was selling most of the time. So he was very humble. He knew he was a character in a positive way. His entrance was the bomb.
Yeah, he was the man.
The man, bro, the man. I mean, the guy was over. So him and Dreamer were the two guys that they almost would get hot if Paul wanted them to win the match. They wanted to lose all the matches.
Sandman was like that, too. I know Tommy was.
Sandman was like that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I never worked with Sandman a ton, you know, I guess because our characters, our styles would have really, you know, I needed somebody to go that I could work with. Paul was smart enough to book me with guys that could kind of get my stuff over. And I say that humbly. I'm not, because, you know, all the different suplexes and stuff back then, you know. So
who was? And I do want to get to the Tasmania.
But
who was the guy that you're like? Oh, I'd like to because I have a certain kind of person who I'd be like that'd be the best heel for my baby face.
Yeah.
So who's like a wrestler? What kind of style do you like that you'd be like if I had a chance?
I mean, today's guy. No, just well, that's what. Well, like a guy like Sabu or Van Damme, guys that were highly athletic. That I couldn't do all the crazy high spots those guys did, so I had no problem eating those moves. Okay, my body was rigid and rugged. I could take those bumps. I could lay on a table while you kill me, as long as we're cool, I'm going to get to throw you a few times
here. Yeah. So you're like the athletes who can
Yeah, the athletes.
For,
thank you. That's the best way to put it. Yeah, I, that's what I was about because I considered myself athletic. But my style, I needed someone that could kind of bump and that was tough, physically tough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sandman was a very tough guy, but he was also a big dude. He was like 6'5", Sandman. Yeah, yeah. So it was like, it was, you know. Paul just never really put us together much, but and I wasn't gonna stand there and let you hit me with a cane as hard as you could 150 times. That just wasn't gonna happen, bro. Tasmaniac.
So yeah, you're at the Gleason's gym. No, I'm sorry, you're at Johnny Rod's.
Johnny Rod's. I started with Johnny before he even went to Gleason's. We were at some couple of little dive gyms here in Brooklyn. And then evolved into Gleason's gym. We went to Gleason's.
And was Tasmaniac the first character?
No. Kid Crush.
Hey.
Yeah, bro, Kid Crush.
Where'd that come from?
Well, I'll tell you where it came from. It was a combination of two things. Like
your love for Crush Soda Pop.
Yes, I loved Crush Soda Pop. No, it was people never really, and even to this day, a lot of people don't know what nationality I am. So I would get, oh, you're Samoan. Oh, you're Hispanic. Oh, you're Italian. Oh, maybe you're Polynesian. You know what I mean? Like, so I had all that stuff. I'm Italian, okay? So what I did was, I said, well, the Polynesian thing's cool. You know, I saw, like, guys like Jimmy Snooker and these guys in Morocco and the Samoans. So I the Kid Crush gimmick was barefoot. And then Sting, I saw this guy Sting for UWF, for Watts' thing. I saw, like, videotape on this guy. Because I started to really become a student of the game. And he had the paint and all this. And it was something about this flamboyant, this blonde hair, this big muscular guy. It was cool. I didn't have his physique or his height. But so I painted my face kind of similar to his. I had like a flat top that was dark. So I was a combination of Sting and like Snooker, which is just crazy. Kid Crush, right?
Yeah, which sounds like King Kahlua. You know, remember him?
Yes, of course. Okay. I know Mike. Yep. And that was a long time ago. And I think I did the gimmick better than King Kahlua.
Was it a similar
I digress.
Gimmick?
It was similar.
That's what it sounds like in my head.
He had a few years experience on me at that time. But then I'm like, this isn't working. You know, and then I started, you know, people also would, I had a nickname in school, Taz, because I was shorter, darker complexion, like the Tasmanian Devil. So I'm like, let me do this Tasmanian Devil type thing, but I don't want to be a cartoon character. I always was into, I want to be taken serious. I don't want to be a joke, you know. So I dressed kind of like with the fur and the barefoot, you know, and paint face and crazy long hair, like dreadlocks. I did all this crazy stuff. But when the bell rang, I was hell-bent that people respected the way I worked and my style. And they would giggle and laugh, and I'd work shows like this until I got in the ring. And like, oh, okay, this guy is not playing around. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing to me. I wanted to keep credibility as an athlete.
And that was just you churning or people influence or helping?
It was me. And I remember back then I bounced it off Johnny Rods. He thought it was a good idea, mm-hmm. you know. Because he had me working. He would, you know, obviously had hookups with all these books, getting us booked on these independent shows in the Northeast. And I did the job forever. I was like a job guy. I worked 20-minute matches, but yeah. Because I was smaller, you got to lose. That's how it was.
When did Tasmaniac start to take off a little bit?
ECW. I went to Japan as a Tasmaniac first for Wing, this company called Wing, years ago. Yeah. And this is when FMW was hot. Wing was like an alternative.
Right. And I'm very interested in how you got there, like how...
I got there.
I mean, had you started getting good, or were you kind of looking back where you're like, I wasn't that good, but I went to Japan?
No, it was cool. I was actually pretty good back then. Okay. I did all right, you know, because of suplexes, you know. So they liked me there, and I worked, I think, two tours for them.
But
and
who saw you, right? Someone
it
had
was,
to.
It was, I think it might have been, what's his name? Fumi Saito. I think that's who it was. Because he was always in the States, like a photographer. You know?
Oh, okay.
And what's his name? Wally Yamaguchi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then...
Why do I know Wally Yamaguchi?
He's with New Japan. He's for years. He was a referee, and Wally's like a legendary referee, yeah. but part of the office for New Japan okay. for like
Is he decades. Red Shoes?
I don't think he's Red Shoes. Okay. I know you. I don't think he is.
Okay.
But anyway, that's how the whole thing with those guys happened with
Wing?
Wing, thank you. And
who'd you go over with?
Oh, man.
Do you remember like that?
I
first
do
tour?
Remember Kevin Sullivan. That's when I first met Kevin Sullivan, and he kind of took me under his wing, and
which
I learned.
Is nice.
Yeah, man, I learned a ton. Then we ended up hooking up in ECW.
Did you go in like scared that he wouldn't, and he'd like almost like bully you on these tours?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a
I got
nice
ripped
shoot,
left
it?
And right. Okay. Like the first time I worked my first match, I had to work with this guy Gypsy Joe. I didn't know who he was.
God, your first match ever.
In Japan.
In Japan, yes.
And I get off this plane. They pick me up. They bring me to this Cork and Hall, okay? Mm-hmm. And I see the car, Gypsy Joe, first match. And I didn't know what it was. And then Kevin Sullivan said, well, it's that old guy sitting over there. And he's like decrepit, like rigor mortis is setting in, you know.
Creeper style.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God. I go, Kevin, how am I going to? He goes, yeah, you got to be very gentle with him. I didn't know him.
Yeah.
He's like, he's just be very, very gentle with him. He's a very broken down old man. Just, he's got nothing. I'm getting ribbed. I didn't know it at the time. And then I go out there with this guy. And he beat the shit out of me. And I'm like, okay, we're in a real fight now here. Like, so now I'm like, frig this whole, you know, old guy. I'm punching this guy in his head, slapping him in his face as hard as I can. And he keeps coming, bro. And it's like, come on, you motherfucker. He's hitting himself with chairs. He's cracking me with chairs. Hit me with it. I'm hitting him with chairs as hard as I can.
Are you blown away? Or
I can't believe what's happening. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, this guy's an animal. I couldn't stop this guy. God, toughest guy I've ever wrestled.
My mind would have been so many places.
And then I'm beat up, my eyes bleeding, right? I'm on the outside, and I peek, and I see the entranceway, and I see all the boys are watching, laughing. Kevin Sullivan flipping me off. Oh, man, bro, what a rip. And then Joe, Gypsy Joe, when we got in the back, was laughing. He hugged me, kissed me on the head. He goes, oh bro, nice. We had to break your cherry, you know? And it was cool. The rest of the tour, I worked with him a lot, and it was cool.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Did he tell you, like, how did Gypsy Joe become a thing? Because he was a thing in Japan,
dude,
huh?
Big thing, man.
Yeah.
And that's why when I came out first, and it was like, ooh, you know, I had the paint, the barefoot, the fur. And then they go, Gypsy Joe. And he comes out, and the place explodes. Warrior Pop, Road Warrior Pop. I'm like, what the hell? And they're going nuts for this guy. I'm like, okay, so they know him here. Next thing I know, it's like he's beating the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, bro. And we went over the matches. Yeah, we do maybe tackle, drop down, you know, yeah. Go easy, my neck, my shirt. He's telling me, oh, what a rib.
Oh.
And and then the rest of the tour was awesome. So yeah. I'll never forget that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Gypsy. And then, I mean, God, fuck. You saw that Gypsy Joe New Jack YouTube clip.
Yeah, craziness.
Good Lord.
Crazy.
But it shows how crazy that Gypsy Joe is.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts. But a heart of gold. Good.
Was he a good dude?
Yeah. Dude, he had a bullet hole. He just got shot.
Oh,
he lived in Nashville. And he got shot. He threw him in the locker room. He goes, yeah, I got shot. I got grazed.
In wrestling or life?
No, in life. In just a bar. He got like a hole in his side. Pulls the bandage. He goes, yeah, I got the... I'm like, what the fuck? Yo, so...
Dude, I mean, maybe it's different, but Jewish kid from the suburbs, I would have been like, what world am I in?
Yeah, it was crazy.
But I guess you're a New York.
I was a New York street kid, but I still was a little bit like, all right, this guy, you know. When I saw the bullet gimmick, I'm like, all right, maybe he's a little tougher than they're telling me.
All I would think is like, I don't think my mom would want me to be here. Like, that's my mindset.
No, but it was, so then it ended up, you know, I was working. The Tasmaniac thing started catching on, you know, in the New York, New Jersey area, like as far as indie shows.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call them indie shows for lack of terms because there's no name.
Right.
And up in New England and all that jazz. And then I ended up, you know, Paul Heyman always kind of liked, he saw a videotape on me. And a guy named Ted Petty, if you remember Teddy, God rest his soul, you know, from Public Enemy, you know, Rock or Rock and all. He worked as a cheetah kid back then, and he was real close with Johnny. Johnny used to rent all his rings, and he lived in Jersey, so we would come down to Johnny's dojo back in the day and work with the guys a lot. So he liked me, Teddy, and helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended up being that Teddy was doing all the rings for ECW Eastern Championship Wrestling, mm-hmm. I'm missing something. So while Paul was, this is what I want to tell you, was in the NWA or before it was WCW when he was doing like commentary and he was a manager. He kind of had a little bit of influence with the office, and he reached out to me, and he got my number from Ted, and was like, I'm trying to get you booked down here to get you on a real deal. I'm like, you're kidding me.
Wow.
I was, yeah. It never panned out, but he had me on a short list of guys that he wanted to bring in. I was one of the guys.
Did any of the, were there, was there a list? Maybe Jack, Cactus Jack, Bob.
I don't know if Mick was on the list. I don't tell you the truth. I don't lie. I don't know who was on the list.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't share that with me,
right.
But, I would assume, you know, several guys that end up in ECW were on that list, you know.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
Yeah, so then when he took over kind of the whole ECW thing, Paul just, well, even before that, IWC ECW,
mm-hmm.
he ended up taking the book over for about a week, Paul, and he brought me in there. But I had some heat with them because I had left. because I didn't want to do a job for somebody because I was an idiot kid. And they said, fuck you, you're done. You never work in the state of New York again. You're out, because they had big influence with the athletic commission.
Mm.
I'm like, all right, well, now you're telling me I'm not going to do something. So now I'm going to get even, I'm driven.
Hard. Yeah.
Paul comes back in. He calls me. He's like, bro, I'm booking this thing here with Savoldi. I go, okay, well, they don't like me.
Yeah.
He goes, I know they don't. They told me they don't want you, but I want you. I'm the booker. You come. You come to up to Middletown, the Catskills. We work, and you're going to work. And then, whew, there was some pushback from the guy who paid you, you know. But I worked a bunch of TVs, and then Paul got fired or quit or whatever happened because Joe Pedicino took the book off. It was just craziness.
You know, when I look back at, like I said, like, you know, just watching ECW from an outside perspective, I see all those stars, and you see the individual stars, but the reality is it's like a brother system, right? Like, this guy helped me. Ted was doing the ring.
Yeah.
He
had the ring. Yeah, dude, no, for real. The rings, yeah. And his rings were good.
And like, right, Mikey just was there because he was helping the ring.
Mikey was on. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Mikey was on the ring crew just helping out, making $10, $20. Yeah. And he was one of the guys, I think he was one of the guys that were getting the ring before the show, just checked the ring out. Right. And Paul saw him and was like, look at this guy. You know,
but, you know, in my head at that time, it's just like, you know, you wonder where, like, he plucks these guys out, or he finds these guys, or he scouts them. It's like, no, they're just around.
Yeah.
And he makes them a star, right?
He does. And you know what the thing with Paul, man, he was always, no matter if he were a main event or opening match guy, he would always take time to talk to the boys. He was always cool with the guys. You know, before the whole thing with the checks and all that, years later.
Mm-hmm.
And he always was cool with everybody. He came up the right way, you know. Always respectful to the talent, you know. I mean, you know, guys like him back then that weren't wrestlers or Cornette, these guys understood, you know what I mean? They knew the business, you know.
This is correct. You were in the, like, working in the office, like, shipping stuff?
Is that incorrect? It's a little incorrect. So then, you know, once ECW started taking over.
I love that idea. Yeah, I'd like to hear what you did, I guess.
I'll tell you. Yeah. Dreamer had a lot to do with that. Yeah. So, real simple. Paul, I started to get over. After I hurt my neck, I came back. We kind of killed the Taz Maniac, and this Taz guy developed. And then I got hurt. So then I come. Now I'm out 9 months. So we just started to do the regular Taz guy without, wearing boots, wrestler, shooter-style guy. And then, boom, I break my neck. So now, just as I'm starting to get pushed.
How did you break your neck? Sorry.
Spike pile driver in Fort Lauderdale for ECW. It was a tag match. Me and Eddie Guerrero against Too Cold Scorpio and Dean Malenko. And we worked all over the place with this same tag match. Eddie and I were the baby faces. The heat was on me. Why I was the guy that had to sell, I have no idea, when I was horrible at it. And Eddie was awesome at it. But Eddie had a much better comeback. Eddie was just better than me in general. So Eddie had a great comeback. So whatever. But so the heat was on me, and they did a spike pile driver off the second rope. Dean, it was my fault. He hooked me for the pile driver. Scorp came down, grabbed my boot, spiked me, and I landed on my forehead. My whole body supined. Yeah,
good.
My timing was off. I didn't grab. You know, it was just
as you hit, were you like, oh, that I'm.
I knew it.
You know,
everything went numb, dude.
Ugh.
Everything went numb, and Dean knew it. Scorp knew it. Eddie knew it. And so, I don't remember, I think it was Dean, and Scorp started, you know, getting heat with the audience. Eddie's telling me, bro, roll to the apron, roll, and I started to come back a little bit. I couldn't stand up, and I kind of just rolled to the apron, and then Eddie got in and just did the whole match.
Finished the match.
And I tried to get, I couldn't stand up.
That's scary. And like, also, it's like the outlaw world of ECW. Like, yeah. I would know this from the indies, it's like, I don't know. There's probably not a medic. I don't know. Maybe there was. Just like,
no, there wasn't. So to be honest with you,
you just get in someone's car and they drive.
Dreamer,
to
yeah. Tommy brought me to the hospital, and I was.
And you probably shouldn't have been sitting in a car on a bumpy road.
No, I probably
right. Like, you should have been stabilized and taken an ambulance.
Dude, I walked in the hospital. Yes,
that's
and then they had all this testimony. Like, how did they said? How did you walk in here? I said, I just walked.
Yeah.
You know, not fast, but right. I walked. They go, you're in bad shape. Amazing. So. 9 months later, I came back. And
What do you got in you? You got a.
I didn't have surgery.
Oh, just
because back then they weren't going through the front and all that stuff, and I didn't want the back get cut, so I was just dude, it was a bitch. I just did all just tons of physical therapy. I was living on Long Island. I was married. Just got back from my honeymoon, mind you. And Paul, you know, the company was starting to make a little money, and I was terrified because you know we had like a gentleman's agreement how much money I'd make, and he's like, Taz, you're gonna be out a while. You just got married. I'm going to pay you every week.
Wow.
And I'm like, really? He goes, really? He goes, just take your time. And sure enough, he did, man. And that's why I was so loyal for so long. And, and it ends up being while I was out and was a shoot, like
the office, nobody was sending, like, you know, letters, like, hey, hope you're doing well. Like, the boys weren't calling me. Like, no one gave a shit.
Mm.
And I was getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And I was calling Paul. I'm like, I'm hot, I'm hot, I'm hot, for months and months and months. And I just cut this promo to Paul on the phone, how angry I was. And he's like, and I never really wanted to talk on the mic because I wasn't good at it. And he said, Taz, that's your promo when you come back.
Wow.
And I'm like, what promo? I go, I'm not saying this in front of people. Because yes, you are. And that's kind of how it all happens.
So that's how you, being a great mic man and eventually a commentator and like known for your voice.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Dude, that's because of Heyman. I got to put him over. I hate to put him over, but I got to.
But based off of your rage because nobody would say hi to you.
No one cared about poor Taz. What about Taz? Forget Raven. What about Taz? Right. So, you know.
Was it in that 9 months that you started doing office stuff or you didn't do office
stuff? No, no. Okay, let me get this. Sorry about that. What happens is now I'm back. And I'm really, now I got this heel thing going, me and Fonzie, he's the manager, Sabu Heat, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, and it just really was just on fire. And, you know, our agreement, Paul and I, kind of ended. So it was like, Taz, I want you to stay here. We got to pay you more money. I go, yes, I'm in. More money. I like that. Hmm. So
he goes, I need an Escalade.
Yeah. Yeah. No. But anyway, so he says, I want to have a wrestling school where guys get trained the right way, slowly. I don't want guys just, you know, roughshotting in the business. I take your time with guys. I want you to run the school. I go, well, I'm not leaving New York. I just, you know, this is where we live. And he goes, no, you find a spot on Long Island. So a young wrestler named Bubba Ray Dudley, you know, I talked to him because he knew a lot of some people, you know, in New York that had some real estate connections.
Yeah, years later, I mean, just on the street, like, not on the street, but like, he was a guy getting buildings and shit, right?
Oh, he was.
Just knows people.
He just knows people.
Yeah.
That's what, we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
So he got this building in Deer Park, New York, which is Long Island. And, you know, and he got it through this guy named Biagio, who's a cement guy. And it's a shoot. It's a shoot, the whole thing. He owned a cement company. And Long Island Cement, it was called. Simple name, right? Simple marketing. And we got this building next to a chop shop. And me and Bubba... Bubba worked in the school, and Paul said, who do you want there? I said, I want Mikey Ripwreck in there to help out because he's such a great bump taker, and he lives on Long Island. And he just brought in this team called the Eliminators. And I said, I want this guy, Perry Saturn, to work with me as like kind of a quasi-assistant trainer. He goes, well, they live up in Boston. I said, well, let me talk to them. And then sure enough, I helped them find an apartment on Long Island, the Eliminators, Cronus and Saturn, and the rest is history. And then that's kind of what happened with the school. So in that school... I ran the wrestling operations of it with Perry, and Bubba basically got the buildings out of there. He had an office in the dojo. We fixed it up really nice, hooked it up. Paul put money into it. It was a really cool little spot.
Mm.
And Dreamer up in Westchester where he lived, him and little Guido, they were kind of handling all the merchandise, and they had a warehouse. And I never been to that warehouse all the years in ECW. I never been there, right? And they're... Things were going so well that we ended up, he had to stock some of the merchandise on Long Island in the dojo because we had room, like another warehouse. So I guess that's
where,
what you
would
call office.
You didn't design something?
Oh, no, I did. Yeah, I designed all of the logos.
Then maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay. All of the pay-per-view logos, the boys' t-shirts.
Wow. Are you an artist?
I taught myself how to do graphic design back then because Paul didn't have money to pay someone.
Using what, Microsoft Paint?
No, I I would kind of, I had this guy who would print the silk screen who'd make the t-shirts. He had a Corel Draw program when it first came out, and he taught me how to use the Corel Draw gimmick, and then and that's how it happened.
Fun. Okay.
Yeah, it was a hobby. It was just a hobby, and it just stuck. I still design all my own stuff.
And you're wearing a Taz show shirt right now. That's very cool.
We're going to get to that.
Yes.
We need at least 30 minutes for the Taz show conversation. Yeah, I'm joking. Stop. I'm teasing.
But, okay, so the last thing I do want to hit on, and we'll talk about your radio show, your new podcast and everything, but I guess that moment where you went into MSG, right? Like, I love the underdog story. You know, I feel as myself, I'm an underdog. And so, you know, I'd like to think that you think of yourself as an underdog, especially going into that moment.
Yes. But a couple things about that moment. Yeah. I did a podcast about this when I first started with the podcast deal. See, when I first was talking with WWE before I left ECW, you know, ECW now was hot, hot, hot. And Vince Russo was writing, he was the main guy with Vince, and Vince Russo liked ECW and he liked my stuff. You know, I never knew Vince. I never met him. He was a New York guy, but I didn't know the guy.
Mm.
he contacted me, and he's the guy who courted me to come there. And then I met with Vince McMahon and stuff, and ended up signing with them. But the gimmick was not supposed to be that I was like some underdog guy. I was supposed to come in like pretty hot and heavy. And I've even told this story. The original idea Russo had for me to come in was, at the time, Ken Shamrock was hot, and he had the Lion's Den gimmick he used to do. Remember, he used to do that with WWF?
He did something with Owen Hart and like a weird, I know what you mean?
He had like a
weird MMA cage.
I can't remember what the name of it was. And he was going to do some other legit UFC fight or MMA fight, whatever. I don't know if it was UFC back then. It might have been. And Russo, they had to get him off TV. But they were getting good ratings with this cage gimmick, this little mini cage. So I was supposed to come in and end up getting an angle with Shamrock, defeating him and taking over the cage until he came back, then put him over.
Mm-hmm.
It never happened. I don't know why, but that just never happened. And I know why, because Russo quit and went to WCW. That's why it never happened. Yeah. Hello. And then when I came in, I didn't know what they were going to do with me. And they put me against Kurt, and all that stuff happened, and at the Garden, it was amazing. But I even told the story on my show. Dude, Colt, when I came out at the Garden, and they popped like they did,
yeah,
I knew I was doomed.
Doomed?
Doomed.
You weren't like, I hope my people cheer for me, and then you come out and they do cheer for you?
No, I was just concerned that no one would know me, and they all knew me.
Right.
Because of the power that ECW had in New York.
Yeah.
But as I'm walking out, I'm realizing, as I'm literally walking to the ring, I had this surreal moment. I'm like, this pop is insane. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it right now. And while I was walking down, but the pop wasn't made by the WWE. And I knew enough.
You knew that.
I was around the business enough. Yeah. I knew they're going to give me a makeover.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened.
Fuck, man.
Yeah.
So you didn't even get to live in that moment?
That one night. I knew it when I watched back the match and I heard the commentary.
Yeah.
And I heard...
I'm saying, like, in that moment, as you come out, did you get to live into it, or were you...
Oh, yeah.
You too much in your head?
Well, I loved it, dude. I'll never forget. It was the greatest moment of my professional life.
Yeah.
But when I heard the commentary back the next day in catering, we were in Philadelphia doing Raw, and we have a monologue, as you know, and catering, the boys would watch the pay-per-view while they're eating, and I heard JR's commentary, and it went this whole illegal choke thing. That was never discussed. I don't know, I guess that happened on headsets in JR's ear and King's ear, you know.
Oh, shit, they like him. Make his move illegal.
JR called me a human suplex machine once during that match, and then that was it. And next thing you know, I'm a human wrecking machine. Like, what was that? Well, in my contract, my IP, my intellectual property, was the human suplex machine, was TAZ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that was mine in our negotiations. They were like, yeah, you could have all that. We're not going to use it. They didn't tell me that. But and that's good business by them. I'm not knocking
right,
them,
right,
but that's just
course.
The way, you know,
yeah.
That's just how it is.
So. And then, listen, another thing that's that I love is the longevity in the career. Always in it. You know, you made the decision. You know, I think it was your kind of decision, like, hey, maybe this commentator role is...
It was Vince.
Gives it, okay.
I'll tell you the truth. Like I tore my bicep when I was only there a few months, and then I was out. They took care of me on that, paid me and all that stuff. Came back, pushed me, and SmackDown started to become popular, and they had Jerry Lawler doing both shows.
Mm.
So Vince came to me. He said, "Look, we're going to do an angle tonight where you get into it with Lawler, and then tomorrow night on SmackDown, I think it was, you'll sit in with Michael Cole for like one match and mock King. I said, yeah, okay, I'll try it. No problem. And they kept me out there like more than one segment. I'm like, okay, no one's telling me nothing. Am I supposed to leave? Look at Michael Cole's like, I don't know. Yeah. And then the angle got heavier with Lawler, and then it ended up segueing into, you know, Vince saying, look, I think you have a future in this and I want to help you. You live in New York. You're 40 minutes from the studio. I want to set you up to train in the studio. And they would have me with other guys learning how to be a commentator.
It's almost a testament to being in the business and being too good at, like, everything. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's people out there who, like, oh, like, hey, like, you know, like, hey, do this. And they're like, all right. And they've been around wrestling. It's kind of
the same thing.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. I've been around wrestling for so long.
Exactly. Yeah. And the commentary thing, making that transition was not easy. I mean, it was hard and it was a challenge. I didn't want to do it.
Mm.
My wife's like, look, this is a way for you to get out of the ring and it's a longer life, you know? And sure enough, I was smart enough to know that, but it was hard, man.
I'd imagine.
You know, and it was hard. And then, you know, and I just worked at it, you know. And, you know, I was, as a commentator, I was in a quiet taste. Some people didn't like my commentary, but the guy who paid me did.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, listen, we're all acquired taste to everybody. Yeah.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And then the, and so now you're podcasting. And you're, yeah. And not only podcasting, you have a deal with CBS Radio.
Straight deal, yeah. It's crazy.
And, like, what a great, again, another transition of longevity in wrestling. Different ways, finding ways. Hustler, man. We're hustlers.
That's it, bro. Finding ways. You know, I've said it to you on my show. I've said it when you're not on my show. I've always looked at you as the pioneer of this whole podcasting for people from the business.
I appreciate
it. And I mean that, you know. And anybody who's a fan of the Human Podcast Machine, I've said that about Colt Cabana a billion times. And maybe not a billion, but maybe a couple hundred. So, you know, so it was, you know, I wanted to be a little bit different than like watching these other guys that were doing podcasts, where yours was more conversational. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, I'm like, I like what this guy does because it's a conversation. Like you and I right now, we're sitting here. There's no script, man.
No.
You're not looking at questions. You're just talking to me. And that's kind of my deal too. And so I guess I quasi copied that style, you know. I mean, and then for the first, when CBS came to me with the podcast, I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I was working for TNA as a commentator. I was, you know how podcasts is, you don't make a ton of money, you know, out of the gate. And after about 2 months of doing podcasting, I'm like, you know, I kind of want to go even a different direction. And CBS was like, whatever you want to do, your numbers are cool. And I kind of got away from like not a ton of, I wasn't big into the guesting.
Yeah.
More topic driven as opposed to guest driven.
It's hard to, it's almost hard to rely a little bit. Like this way.
It's rough.
This way. If it's, if you're not relying on, you know, it's hard for me because I have to make sure I'm on the road every single you know, week. And,
well, you're kind of like a podcast diva, bro, because it's like with you, it's got to be in person. That's I mean, I respect it, but I'm like, this Colt, he's really starting to get me hot. But no, I like that because it's not on a phone. So it's good for your fans to hear that. Yeah. Listen to your show.
But it's also, so, but that's good. In a perfect world, I'd probably have a show where I didn't have to like have guests because.
Yeah.
You know, then it's never, there's, it's just on you. Like,
yeah.
If you have the hustle, and the, and yeah. then you can do it and get it done.
No, it is, bro. Like, for me, to do point of view shows on wrestling shows on TV or pay-per-views, it's easy for me because, to be frank with you, when you're a color commentator and you're an accomplished color commentator who's making money for a living, your ego has to stay in the locker room. And you have to put everybody over. You have to put the brand over, the talent over. I never had a problem with that. So I have no problem going on the air and doing a show and talking about a brand, WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, whoever, you know. I have no problem with that. Some guys do have a problem with that. Mm. I don't, you know. So I'm confident in myself. So it ended up segueing, you know, with CBS. I'm a New York guy. They're a New York-based company. So I, you know, I had done some radio with them years ago.
I remember that.
Yeah, they were doing a platform called Free FM.
Okay.
Guy Talk stuff, and they had me do a bunch of shows, but I never got a deal. And I did some stuff with Sirius Radio, but I never had a real deal. And I thought it'd be cool to have a show about the business, like a full-time daily show, because no one really on a high level has ever really done that.
Mm-hmm.
And CBS, they saw the numbers, and they saw my work ethic, because I signed with them in November, and the platform started in January. And for 2 months, I was up at their offices in their studio at least 3 days a week on my own dime, doing imaging for my show, building the show, submitting concepts to them and different stuff in the show, in the podcast. And they're like, this guy is a pit bull. He really, this is not a money grab to him. This is a guy that has a passion for this. I just did an upfront, right, for this IAB advertising, you know, for a podcast for CBS. And I talked about podcasts, and they invited me to do this, right? In this thing, I explained, I started talking about the business. And you got a bunch of advertisers and salespeople, they have no idea what about our business.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm telling you about sacrifices and bumps and bruises and stitches and missing my son's first step, his first word, all this kind of stuff that we all have these stories as wrestlers. I'm telling you guys this for a reason, because when CBS came to me about a podcast, I didn't look at it as a podcast. I didn't look at it as this Taz thing and get myself over. I looked at it as they want me to do a show and it's going to encompass my life's work. I have pride in my life's work, my body of work. Because it affected my family and my life. And it's life experiences who I am. So I always looked at it like that. You know what I mean? It's a little deep, you know, but I'm shooting, you know?
Of course.
And then they said after, I don't know, I want to say 6 months, and I was having issues with TNA, getting my check on time. And I'm like, I said, guys, you know, we've kind of breached the deal here a few times, and I'm done with this. Because CBS said, when you're done with those guys, we want to do a full-time you know, daily gimmick.
And it's, you know, it's nice to people want to deal with people who are passionate about stuff.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. You know,
that's what it is.
So I signed with them in the summer, or early in the summer, with CBS. I ripped up the other podcast contract, signed a new deal, and which was supposed to kick off, I think, like the day after Labor Day, but we pushed it back to September 14th, which this is a podcast, but yeah, being passed, but whatever. And it's a daily show, morning drive, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern, and it's the Taz Show, Body Slams and Beyond, and it's 90% wrestling talk, you know? Live phone lines, the whole deal. Straight. I mean, I'm fortunate with CBS because they have all the resources, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm right there, you know. And then I'll talk football. I'll talk, you know, mainstream sports, you know, and guests from here and there, you know, that type of thing.
Sure.
When you came on my show, did that week of Taz Live.
That was kind of the test.
That was a test. Yeah.
That's great.
So yeah, that's kind of what happened.
So cool. So that's been plugged. But it can all be on play.it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's real easy to find. TazShow.com.
Great.
Which takes you right to play.it. And there's a video element. So now they put in all robotic cameras in the studio, just some GoPro hostage shot.
Yeah.
It's straight cameras, just like you'd watch Boomer and Carton or any other radio show on TV or online. And CBS owns play.it, which is one of their online networks. They own radio.com. And the show's also on Spotify and TuneIn. So it's like...
That's huge.
It's on a lot that's of huge. Spots.
You're on Twitter? What's the other social stuff?
That's it. At Official Taz. I got an Instagram thing. I don't even know the name. Oh, it's Taz Talk. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I put stuff on there, but the Twitter's at Official Taz. And you got a huge following, so hopefully some of your fans will want to listen to my show, too.
Yeah.
It's a daily show, and obviously I'm going to have you on the show whenever you want to come on, and you're going to have to get up early, though, bro.
Yeah, I know. That's
wait a minute.
I'll figure Friday when I'm flying out at like 10, and I'll call in early. I appreciate you being on, bud.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, Cole. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Hey, great to have Taz on, and go check out his show. It's not a podcast. It's a daily show. He wants to make that very clear. Hopefully, I'll sneak on some of those, and you can hear my voice on the airwaves if you're into that type of thing. All right, before we get out of here, let's get into some plugs and
upcoming events.
All right, the best way you can support, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, Twitter and Instagram, at Colt Cabana, Facebook /AOW Podcast. I got a very public email, ColtWrestling@gmail.com. Maybe you're a promoter, want to put me on your upcoming show or convention. CutMyPromo.com is a YouTube series I have. Check out my YouTube channel. Also, ColtCabana.com is my website where you can check out everything, including the P.O. box that I have. Send me some snail mail. Upcoming Saturday, October 3rd in the afternoon, Monroe, New Jersey, legendsofthering.com. That's a convention. At night, Union, New Jersey, prowrestlingsyndicate.com. Wrestling Kurt Hawkins, Brian Myers. Saturday, October 10th, Enfield, Connecticut, us versus them, wrestling.com. October 16th through November 8th, going to Japan. Use that Google Translate on noah.co.jp. Friday and Saturday, November 13th and 14th, Philadelphia and Queens, New York, houseofhardcore.net. And Sunday, November 15th, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, I believe, not Toronto. Doing a live Art of Wrestling at 2 o'clock. The show itself starts at 4 o'clock. That's all done at alpha-onewrestling.com. And Saturday, November 28th, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Come see me and the rest of the world at WrestleCade.com. That is the show for this week, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you supporting and hopefully subscribing. Subscribe to the show. You'll get it every week for free as a little surprise that comes to you. Thanks to Taz for coming on the show this week. Thanks to Gable Guy Jeff and Stu Stone, Kid Russell and Matt Jenkins on the music, Dane Miller with the tech help. Thanks to our sponsors, HighSpots.com. Hundreds of full-length titles available to download. $5 wrestling titles, AMA knee pads, gear, mask, and now they're kind of doing a wrestle crate type thing. Check that out, HighSpots.com. OneHourTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingTees.com. You cannot get a Jim Neidhart shirt there because WWE doesn't want you to. But you can support your favorite independent wrestlers and legends at ProWrestlingTees.com, where they will get a sweet check if you buy their t-shirt. TweakedAudio.com/Colt, the earbuds that I use, get over 30% off and free shipping just because you listen to the show. That's it. We're done for the week. Some of you guys saw on the Art of Wrestling Facebook page, I was asking some audio questions. Hopefully they'll fix next week. I ordered like $500 worth of gain and preamp stuff. I don't even know what it means. I'm just praying I plug it in and it works. We'll see. I mean, that's literally thanks to DraftKings and Tops that I could just go on there and easily buy that. So I appreciate you for gambling online for football. Also, that show in Chicago, come to it. It's at the Cards Against Humanity headquarters. They wanted me to let you know that there is no, like, crazy, they're not doing any crazy Cards Against Humanity stuff, but they did give me a shitload of Cards Against Humanity stuff, so I have that now. Maybe you and I can play after the show. Maybe we'll play a giant games of cards. That'll be a lot of fun. I thought, listen, I had to sell Marty hard on Wednesday before Thanksgiving, but I think it's the right move because I remember doing absolutely fuck all, and I don't want to drink. People that don't want to go party. Plus, the show's done at fucking 10. You can go out and get hammered afterwards. Makes sense. It's going to be a great show. Join Marty and I and probably some friends, right? Wink. Remember last time. Good show. All right. I'm out of here. Hey, guys. This has been The Art of Wrestling. For Colt Cabana, I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.
You know, ever since I came home to Minnesota, I've been hearing how the Twins are hurting without Carew. Well, don't count on it. Guys like Erickson, Goltz, and Marshall have given us some of the best pitching we've had in years. New guys like Landreau and Jackson have already helped us. And Roy Smalley's become a star. Sure, a lot of people have written us off.
That's okay.
Right, because now we've got something to prove.
Tell them like it is, Coos.
Right.
The Minnesota Twins. This year, we've got something to prove.